Hello, I'm Andy Berry, the host of Metro Morning on CBC Radio 1, 99.1 in Toronto. And this is our weekly podcast, Toronto This Week. It features highlights of our local and regional shows on CBC, shows like Here and Now, Ontario Morning, and Fresh Air. But first, here's an item from Metro Morning. Last night in CBC's Glenn Gould studio, we heard what you want from candidates in the upcoming municipal election and some of your visions for Toronto's future. We also heard from city politics reporters from five people vying for positions on council. This morning, we're turning the mic over to the man who was not physically present at a town hall, but was very definitely on many people's minds. David Miller, again, is in the studio to share with us his response to some of what we talked about last night, and to hear if he feels he's fulfilled his vision for Toronto since he took office and what he still wants to do. Mr. Miller, good morning.
Good morning, Andy.
You have been, many people believe, compared to the last campaign, taking a very low profile, sort of laying low, not a whole lot of things to say. Why are you, would you say, so low-key?
Oh, well, I don't agree with that at all. I've been campaigning extremely hard since May. It's just different because people are judging me on what I've done over the past 3 years and judging what I say against that record, and I'm very proud of what we've done. It's been an extremely active council, whether it's on environmental issues, on housing people from the streets, on rejuvenating the TTC, on the New Deal for cities, making sure we have a fair share of the revenues that come from Toronto and go to Ottawa and Queen's Park, or so much else. It's a record I'm proud of.
Yes, but no unifying idea, no unifying thought, no new broom at City Hall, no new fixed link to the Toronto Island Airport, both of which were powerful symbols in trying to place yourself in people's minds last time around.
Well, I think this election is about building Toronto for the future. The last election, we were at a turning point. That's why I ran for mayor. And I thought it was very important that City Hall be open to people that the city government of this city invest in people, and we've started to do that again. Now's the time for Toronto to succeed. That's why I'm running again. And I got to say, Andy, Saturday night at Nuit Blanche, I thought was a coming out party for Toronto. We had hundreds of thousands of people out there enjoying arts. It was the most astonishing thing, and it spoke to what Toronto is today. It's a city that we're proud of, that's dynamic, that's diverse, that's creative, that's interesting, that's exciting, that's modern, a real 21st century city. And I'm running in this election to make sure that 21st century city succeeds.
Sounds great. Let's go back to last time. Let's go back to the fixed link to the airport. Many would argue that you won that particular battle, but you really have lost the war. And your defenders would say it's not your fault, that many of the things that have to do with this city's future and welfare are not in your hands. So Mr. Harper has basically revived the Port Authority, which a lot of us would like to have seen demolished. The federal government is not coming through with the kind of money that we would have expected. We don't have the ability, really, yet. We haven't exercised our ability to contribute to the coffers of the city. We're poor. We're bankrupt, as one of the councillors said yesterday, would-be councillors said yesterday. How much is it within your power or this council's power to really direct Toronto into that 21st century vision you just shared?
Well, there's a lot we can do and a lot we've done over the past 3 years to put us in place to do that. The new City of Toronto Act, for example, which the provincial government announced about a year ago as a result of work that we'd done with the province, puts the city for the first time in a position to be master of its own affairs. But our biggest challenge is finances. And the truth is that billions and billions of dollars leave Toronto every year and go to Ottawa and Queen's Park more than come back. And we need that money. We need to invest in our city. And I'm proud of what we've done in the 3 years with the gas tax, the elimination of the GST, and other things we've negotiated from the federal and provincial governments. But they're not a permanent fix. And I'm going to ask people of Toronto in this election to support me in going to Ottawa and Queen's Park and saying it's time to put Toronto on a proper financial footing so we can invest in transit, people, services, our poor neighborhoods, all of it.
Glenn Murray was with us last night. The former mayor of Winnipeg was in the audience. He was sort of providing us along the way with reality checks. And the issue of money, as far as Mr. Murray came up, was framed this way.
You don't want to raise garbage fees, which most cities in Western Canada use. A 2% tax increase just pays for basically the increase in the police budget. Doesn't give you one more police officer. You don't want to raise taxes, so you're going to do that. I haven't heard anything about major cuts. I've heard about uploading to the province who doesn't want it. I've heard about new revenues from the province that doesn't want it. You're all promising to build community centers, add policing. Where's the money coming from?
Well, Glenn's right. The city is tremendously constrained. And one thing people don't realize sometimes is property tax, every year by law, you get the same amount. Even if the economy's booming, you don't get extra. Our strategy and my strategy has been to build alliances with mayors across Canada, and we're in agreement. You know, Glenn was part of it when he was the mayor of Winnipeg, but the mayor of Montreal, Toronto, Calgary, all of the cities are in agreement. It's time for the federal government to produce a national transit strategy. It's time for the provinces and the federal government to take back the responsibilities that they gave us a few years ago without any money. And in Toronto's case, it's over $700 million a year it costs us for those downloaded responsibilities.
That supports my last contention. It's up to the provincial government to take back. We have to re-upload. John Sewell would like us to de-amalgamate. We could go on and on and on. And all of these things are outside of our own power.
Well, no, they're not. They're actually not. They're within Torontonians' power. And in many ways, that's what the bridge was about. I was able to stop the bridge because it was within the City of Toronto's power to say no. And people have forgotten, during the last election, Andy, when I was sitting here, my opponents were saying, you can't do that. Well, we did.
Meanwhile, it cost us $25 million, and Porter Air is going to be taking off in 3 weeks.
Well, wait a minute. It is incredibly unfair to say the bridge cost us $25 million. That deal is outrageous, and anybody who's read the paperwork knows full well that the federal government, for its own reasons, chose to subsidize Porter Air. It's just it's an outrage. But notwithstanding that, because the people spoke up strongly and said, this is our vision, we want it, and we can do it again. And there's a lot we can do within the city. We've been doing it by building partnerships, our Clean and Beautiful campaign. There's beautiful public spaces across this city that we've done by investing our money wisely, by spending for impact. But Torontonians know that until the fundamental fiscal arrangement is changed, we can't achieve what we absolutely need to on transit and those big issues.
23 minutes after 7, this is CBC Radio 1. You're listening to Metro Morning. We're with the mayor this morning, Jane Pitfield, who, of course, would like his job, will be joining us tomorrow to respond to some of the issues raised last night. We'll return to Mr. Miller after Jim takes a look at roads.
And we'll start again looking to the west. We've had another call from 401 in Guelph Line area with two bits of good news. We mentioned earlier, eastbound near Guelph Line, there was a collision, and we had the center lane blocked. In that area, we still had the vehicles at the scene, but they have been moved to the side. So although it remains slow, it is improving. All lanes are open. And listener adds that the sky is lightening up. So the rain has tapered off, sky lightening up in that area. So this fast-moving storm, which moved through the city, is continuing to the east. On Steeles and Allness, a reminder from TTC, signal lights are out. Approach with caution. Treat it as an all-way stop. Westbound Dundas, just approaching University Avenue, a collision, that being investigated. And we're still seeing conditions much slower than normal. Toronto-bound lanes of the Queen Elizabeth Way and the Gardiner. It is slow coming down 404 through Stouffville Road. Slow north of the Don Valley, in fact, continuing on the parkway all the way down through to Don Mills Road.
We asked for emails and phone calls last night. One of them that we did not get to came from someone named Andrew Stewart, who wrote, given that Toronto needs to generate new revenue, back to money, particularly for public transit and expressways, and given that the new City of Toronto Act will permit the city to toll its roads, why doesn't Toronto make its first priority a congestion or highway charge? How do you respond? You talked about tolls in the last election.
What I said in the last election was if the federal and provincial governments didn't support transit, we would have to find the money somewhere, and that was one of the places. Fortunately, we've made some movement on transit. I don't think tolls are right for Toronto. We've got essentially two highways that come into downtown. You toll those, people don't have a choice.
What about a page from Ken Livingston of London's book? What about finding a way to restrict traffic into the inner core? That's one of the big ideas that we were told last night by many people at the forum we are not embracing in this city. That was a big idea. He was vilified for it. It turns out to be really popular. It's made the City of London a lot of money, and it's kept transit out of the center of the city.
Well, things that work in London aren't necessarily right for Toronto. We have a very different context. London has a public transit network that reaches into every part of the city. We don't have that in Toronto. Regrettably, our transit system is excellent for a city of about 1.5 million. We're now 2.6. And my view is that what we need to do is build streetcars in their own right-of-ways, buses on their own roads, so we have rapid transit across this city. Once you give people alternatives, you may be able to look at things. But I don't think the timing's right, and I don't agree with that approach in Toronto.
But I guess what I'm getting back to...
And I've had 3 years to think about it.
...is not necessarily doing what London did. It's, again, the idea of a big idea, not incremental changes or Band-Aids. Phil Walsh wrote us another letter. He talked about the days when Ontario Place and the Metro Zoo and the Ontario Science Center, public works that captured the public's imagination. And apart from the endlessly vague and endlessly delayed discussion of the waterfront and whether or not we're going to get rid of the Gardner, there seems to be a complete lack of bold strokes.
Well, I don't agree with that, Andy. I mean, yes, we're not building Ontario Place, but the city is trying to bring World's Fair 2015 here. And if you were in Canada in Expo 67, as I was, it was the second day I was in this country. It was the most extraordinary thing. Expo 86 was amazing for Vancouver, and it would be a catalyst for our waterfront and for our city, a real expression of who Toronto is.
And if it doesn't happen as it continues to not happen with the Olympics, I mean, we've lost out on this kind of game before. So we work and we work on it. It deflates all of a sudden, and we're nowhere.
Well, but let's not be negative. I mean, Toronto's incredible.
Be realistic, not negative.
No, you know.
Depending on people elsewhere.
You can't be against incremental necessary change and against bold moves at the same time. We have an amazing city. People are proud of it. And when you speak to Torontonians, the vast majority say the city's going in the right direction. We should be proud. If we can get the federal and provincial governments on side for that bid, I'm absolutely confident we'll win. I went to the Bureau of International Expositions earlier this year. They clearly want Toronto to bid. And we will do an amazing job. And that's the kind of thing we should be proud of. We should step forward in the world and say, we are Toronto. We're proud of our city. We've got a great city. Yes, there's challenges, but we're dealing with them, and we've got a great place to live.
Jane Pitfield, the chief contender for your job, will be joining us tomorrow. I think somewhat inevitably, she is going to tell us that you as a mayor have been a disappointment. You have failed to fulfill the promise that that so many people hoped for from you. So let me just ask you, what is your greatest disappointment in the last few years?
Well, I did in the last election promise that the Toronto Maple Leafs would win the Stanley Cup.
No, seriously, Mayor Miller. No, there must be something that you rue, something you would like to have gone differently and better. What would it be?
No, I actually, Andy, I've been exactly the kind of mayor I promised to be, and I've done exactly what I said I would, and I'm very proud of my record. Every single council meeting the past 3 years, there's been an enormous achievement. Buying Green Lane Landfill just last week. The environmental approval happened on September 15th. We couldn't buy that landfill till September 15th. 4 days later, we had an agreement to purchase it. It's an extraordinary achievement that people have been waiting 25 or 30 years to do. And sometimes big things, sometimes small things. Every council meeting has been an achievement, and I'm very proud of that record. And it's exactly the kinds of things that I promised to do. Strong environment, housing for people, a plan to get the homeless off the street. 800 people have been housed. 800 people who are living on the street are in housing.
And not a single thing you would have done differently, eh? Nothing?
I evaluated things at the time, and you do it, and you can't look back. You just can't. And I'm very pleased with the kind of direction the city's going in. I think it's the right direction.
We'll look forward to talking to Ms. Pitfield tomorrow. I'm sure we'll look forward to talking to you again before Election Day. Thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure to be here, Andy. Thanks.
David Miller on CBC Radio 1, our Vox Box number 416-205-5807. If you'd like to add to some of the calls and emails we got yesterday, and again, we'll talk to Ms. Pitfield tomorrow. I'm Andy Berry, and this is our weekly podcast, Toronto This Week. Now here's Mary Ito with a highlight from this week's Here and Now.
Toronto street youth, they've been given a new voice through a new publication that's being launched this afternoon. The Best of the Street is a new zine that features poetry and graphic art by young people at the Evergreen Center for Street Youth. The publication is also supported by the Toronto Public Library. Teresa Toten, a children's writer, was the force behind The Best of the Street. David Blanchard is a student and also contributor to the publication. They're both here with me in the studio. Hello to both of you.
Hello, and thanks for having us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Oh. Teresa, how did you come up with the idea for The Best of the Street?
I think it was there percolating. Years ago, the Toronto Public Library and Kyle's Make a People had sponsored something similar and quite elaborate and lovely as a zine. Mm-hmm. And then they also sponsored me to go in and do a creative writing workshop. Went in and did not leave 4 years later. And in all that time, I worked with kids and like David and with other writer volunteers. Mm-hmm. And our dream was from the beginning to build a zine.
Why did you not leave?
You fall in love with the kids. They change faces, they change stories, they change in front of your eyes every 5 minutes. They're reinventing themselves. And often they just take off and fly. And most of them who come to the writing workshops are like painfully, really, really talented.
Now, David, he's looking embarrassed. Well, you were one of those students who took Teresa's classes. I mean, how did you get involved?
How did I get involved? Well, actually, technically, I didn't really have a choice. because when she first came, she seen one of my pieces, and she points to me, and she's like, "You got a wonderful voice. Let's work on it. Don't get up. You're staying for the course." So ever since then, I've stayed with the writing program, and my writing's just changed dramatically in front of my eyes myself.
Yeah.
I've never used to been able to open up as much before on paper, but now it's like I open up and it never stops.
How did you end up at Evergreen?
I ended up at Evergreen when I was 16 years old, when I first ran away from my foster care services. Ever since then, I've used their services.
And you're 23 now, too.
I'm 23 now, yes.
Yeah. And Teresa, tell us about the publication and about the poetry that's in it.
Well, the Yonge Street Mission's Evergreen program in particular has been just such a warm, safe-like place. It supports not just me and the kids that come in, but also the other writer volunteers, and the enthusiasm for all of them to come in and put, probably for the first time, things about their life, pieces of their life, fantasies about what could be on paper so that they are heard, often for the first time ever, is really a driving and motivating force. And year after year after year, Evergreen and the Yonge Street Mission has opened that up for us and let us continue. And now the Toronto Public Library, which has done so much in terms of community and outreach for our youth, got on board and is publishing 1,000 copies of The Best of the Street.
Mm. And David, tell us about your writing. What do you write about?
I write about practically anything that comes to mind. I don't have a goal when I'm writing. One of Teresa's sayings is, "Don't think, just write." And whatever comes out on paper, comes out on paper. Don't scratch over, just write. If nothing comes to mind, just write no, 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 yes, yes, yes.
Oh, sort of that stream of consciousness, yes, type of thing, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But when it comes to publishing stuff, I make it a goal of mine to have a reason behind it. And in this case, with the Best of the Street scene, the poem that's in there, I made it a fact to put the yes and no poem in there because I'm kind of sick and tired of walking into a place and people coming up and go, "Are you homeless? Do you drink?" And I figure, what better way to tell people by putting it in a zine?
So this is your definitive answer. Just hand them the book. Like, read this. Yeah. It's
exactly.
All here.
Exactly.
Well, Teresa, you were saying earlier how incredibly talented these kids are. Do you envision actually some of them going on and making a career out of writing?
Absolutely. Not only do some of them, I fully expect David will, and there is another poet who I'm really proud to say has gone on and published in two other publications now in Montreal. But all of them, it's not even those that come out of the gate just with massive talent. It's more importantly those that have come out, put things on paper the first time, and have developed that talent.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been heard.
And David, what are your future plans? I mean, I know you're also a student at CDI College, but what's in store for you?
What's in store for me? I really don't know because I really don't worry about the future because I live day to day. But what I do hope to accomplish is my novel that I've been working on ever since I started the program,
mm-hmm.
which started out as 9 pages but has now turned out to 5 chapters. It's a story of my life. I also plan to compress all the poetry that I've done, put it into one book, and then the proceeds that I make from it go back into the Yonge Street Mission's art space at Evergreen and also towards me.
Well, best of luck, and best of luck, too, with this publication. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you, Mary.
Teresa Toten is a children's writer and founder of The Best of the Street. David Blanchard is a student and contributor to the publication.
That was Mary Ito with an item from Here and Now, heard weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on CBC Radio 1, 99.1 in Toronto. Now here's Jane Houghton with a highlight from this week's Ontario Morning.
Now, we all know that laughter is the best medicine. Perhaps that's why laughter clubs are the new sensation in health. They have sprung up in Kingston, Peterborough, Exeter, and London. Donna Costa is a certified laughter yoga teacher in London, and she joins us on the line. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Donna, how do you make people laugh? That can be pretty hard. Are you a stand-up comic or something?
No, I'm not a stand-up comic at all. Actually, laughter yoga is very easy to get people to laugh. We do some warm-ups, and probably the first thing that gets them laughing is when they hear me laughing by myself.
And is that what you do?
I start that way. I usually start, you know, doing one of the laughters after the warm-up and demonstrate what they're going to be doing, and that kind of takes a little bit of the edge off for them and gets them warmed up, and
okay,
then we'll do it together.
So let's hear it. Yeah,
there
you're right. That can be contagious. Now, can you do that spontaneously, or are you just like a happy person?
Oh, I wouldn't say I'm a happy person. In fact, I used to have a boss that he'd come in when I was a secretary, and he'd look at me and he'd go, "It's not that serious. Smile." So, no, I'm not a spontaneously happy person, but I'm getting happier.
So explain how this laughter yoga club works.
The laughter yoga clubs are actually all free around the world. There's about 5,000 of them now, and it was started by Dr. Kataria out of India because he believed in the benefits of laughing physically and mentally and wanted people to start laughing more. So he started these clubs, and as I said, they're free.
And so they're free because how do you get the space? How do you do them?
Well, if you're lucky, you find someone that will give you the space for free.
Right.
Sometimes we do have to pay depending on where we are, and in that case we take a donation and people make a donation towards the rental, but many clubs are fortunate that people are donating space.
And you don't get paid as a yoga instructor?
Not for the laughter clubs. I do take the laughter yoga out to corporations or workshops and I get paid for that, or I train others and that's paid, but the laughter clubs themselves are free.
And why do you do that? Why do you think it's important?
I think people need to laugh more. We've really disconnected our thinking brains from the feeling in the body, and the laughter yoga helps us feel that feeling again in our body, and it brings more joy to our lives.
And then what do you think it does for the body if you laugh?
Well, there's a lot of studies on laughter, and there's so many benefits. First of all, the laughing itself is a deep diaphragmatic breathing, so automatically it's going to fill your body with more oxygen. But in the process of doing that, we build up our lung capacity, we exercise our blood vessels. There was a study out of Maryland that showed that exercising our blood vessels can help prevent atherosclerosis. We tone up the muscles in our abdomen, so we can have firmer abdomens, which in turn holds our organs better into place and can stimulate our digestive system. It also produces all those feel-good chemicals, serotonin, and it can reduce our stress hormones. So it can reduce high blood pressure. So there are many, many physical benefits to laughter.
Now, what do you do with people who are too shy to laugh, or they come in a really bad mood?
I haven't seen anyone come in a bad mood. I've seen people definitely shy and hesitant and not sure that they really want to be there. But I think because we start out, we do warm-ups to start with clapping and some laughter sounds, and it just is a gradual transition to get them in there. And we laugh together as a group, so I think that puts people at ease. And once you get over a few of the laughters, then you just kind of get into it and you feel like laughing.
Now, what are some of the laughter words that you would get them started with?
Well, we do the clapping, and with that we do ho and ha, which are the sounds of laughter.
And so what does it sound like?
It goes ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. So if you take a moment to say that, you can feel right in your abdomen how that's working those abdominal muscles.
And then what, do you count on somebody breaking into a giggle during that?
Well, that's the warm-up. So that's basically warming up those muscles that we're going to be using.
Right.
And then we have a few breath exercises as well that we use to get warmed up. One of the breaths that we warm up with is an aloha breath. So we start bent over, and then we inhale and raise our hands up, and we go alo, and then as we're coming down and exhaling, we go ha 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 ha.
That should get people going.
That's usually the first one, and people are kind of surprised at it, and it just feels good to start with that laughter. And
yeah.
Then we do some actual exercises where we laugh together.
Well, I mean, even doing yoga itself, because I do yoga, I mean, really, by the end of the class, you're back in your body again. So,
yeah.
So then this is just augmenting that process of getting you back in your body by having the laughter as well?
Yes. Laughter yoga is it's a physical experience. Whereas if you go to watch a comedian or hear jokes, it's a thinking experience. So this is putting the laughter first. Laugh first, and then you'll have the joy after, or the happiness after,
right.
Instead of thinking about it and then having the laughter.
Right. So do you teach others how to become laughter teachers?
I teach others to be what we call laughter leaders.
Okay.
Those are the people that lead the clubs or they go into workshops. We do have a level that we call laughter teachers, and Dr. Kataria, who's the founder of Laughter Yoga, he actually teaches people that himself. And he tours around the world, I think, 7 or 8 months out of the year doing that.
So should people start watching for these, looking to see if there's one in their area?
Sure, absolutely. They can check out the main website, laughteryoga.org, and they can just check and see if there's a laughter club nearby.
Okay. Thanks for talking with us.
Great. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Donna Costa is a certified laughter yoga teacher in London, and as she mentioned, you can go to their website to find that. If you're in the London area, you can check for free laughter programs at tmolondon.com.
That was Jane Houghton with a highlight from Ontario Morning. It's heard weekday mornings from 6 to 8:30 throughout much of southern and central Ontario on CBC Radio 1. And that will do it for our weekly podcast, Toronto This Week. You can hear all our shows live on CBC Radio 1. If you're in Toronto, that's on 99.1, and live on the web at cbc.ca/Toronto. And don't forget, much of our network programming is also now available via podcast. You'll find that at cbc.ca/podcast. We're also looking for some feedback on our podcast, and you can email us at metromorning@toronto.cbc.ca. I'm Andy Berry, the host of Metro Morning. We're heard weekday mornings from 6 to 8:30 on CBC Radio 1, 99.1 in Toronto. For all of us here at CBC Radio in Toronto, have a good week. We'll have another podcast for you next weekend.